Good. Right, Tim, welcome to episode 62.
Thank you, sir.
Fantastic. So, Tim, I did a little bit of looking into you before we came on. And,
okay.
Wow, is all I'm going to say. This is just fascinating. And I think that a lot of the stuff we've just been talking about off camera, actually,
yeah. It
just blows people's mind. Oh, it certainly blows my mind in terms of the stuff that you're doing. I've heard a lot of different things and read a lot of different books and seen a lot of different things. But some of the stuff you've just been saying is just, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, rather than me trying to repeat that in any way, it's going to do you any justice. Do you want to tell the listeners really just a little bit about you and what it is that you actually do?
Okay, so my name's Tim Neal. I suffered for very many years with emotional problems, which are not really labelled as emotional problems in most of the world. So things like anxiety and depression,
sure.
Panic attacks at times, social anxiety, just not really good, but covered it up pretty well, actually. Right.
How did you cover it up?
By doing some award-winning acting.
Okay, yeah.
And like most people, you don't want to admit that stuff, you know, and a lot of the time you don't even know there's anything wrong.
Sure.
You know, and I didn't know there was anything wrong. Apart from I was coming off the back end of a good 10 years hard clubbing.
Right.
And not really addicted to drugs, but I took a lot.
Okay.
Because I was numbing out.
Sure.
from the pain I was feeling.
Really?
You know, I didn't know that at the time.
Right.
You know, but as I got towards the end of it, my girlfriend at the time said to me, I remember coming in from work one day and she went, "I want to ask you a question." I said, "What's that?" She goes, "You're not a very happy person, are you?"
Uh-huh.
And I went, "Oh, I'm all right. But what do you know?"
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah,
you only
yeah.
know what you feel.
Of course.
Right? So I didn't know there was anything wrong, you know.
Yeah.
And she handed me a leaflet and it was about anxiety and depression from the doctors. And she said, "Just read that."
Mm.
So I read it and I got to the bottom and I was sobbing. And I wasn't sobbing because I was upset. I was sobbing because somebody understood how I felt.
Right, right.
Because that's how I'd always felt.
Sure.
But I didn't know.
Great marketing then.
Yeah,
yeah,
perfect.
Yeah.
So I went off to the doctors, did the usual antidepressants, counsellors, therapists.
Really?
None of it did any good whatsoever.
Really?
It just pissed me off, to be
did
honest.
It. So, what happened with the kind of doctors thing? Because, I mean, I'm not discrediting doctors because I think they've got a place, hasn't they?
Sure.
They do a
sure.
lot of good, but, like, why were they so quick just to give you antidepressants? Like, did they not understand it, or...?
Didn't really ask me anything, to be
right,
fair.
Right.
And to be honest, he was more worried about my girlfriend because she was crying.
Sure.
And he said, "I think she's more depressed than you because she was crying," which shows a gross misunderstanding of that.
Right, yeah, totally.
You know, so anyway, I took pills for about a week until one of my friends asked me why I was so happy all the time and took them off me. Thank you. And then started seeing counsellors. They just annoyed me. As soon as I knew what was wrong, I started reading up on it and I knew what they were doing. I knew the kind of tests they were doing and stuff. And I was just like, this is bullshit, you
right.
know. And but then she found this private guy for me, and I, looking back, I think he was a bit of a Tony Robbins fan.
Okay.
Because it was very Tony Robbins-esque.
Okay.
But he was the first person who let me know that I was doing this.
All right.
It wasn't some weird thing that was coming from the outside
sure.
and just attacking me.
Right.
It was patterns I were running and things I was deciding to do,
sure,
which
sure.
didn't go down well when he first told me.
Of course, yeah,
it's a bit of pill. It's
yeah.
a bit, yeah, it's much easier to blame, and it's a bit of pill to swallow that. But it's also powerful in a way, because if you know you're doing it, you can undo it.
Yes.
Whereas if it's coming from the outside, you probably haven't got a lot of choice about
of
it,
course.
You know. And so he kind of gave me the keys to my car, and Edie said, "Look, do you understand what I mean by conscious and unconscious?" So I was like, "No." So he explained the conscious and unconscious patterns to me, and 95% of us is unconscious.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
and it's just running a show. Well, whether you're not consciously thinking about it. So the example I always give people is like, if you're driving your car and you get the other end, how many times do you get somewhere you're like, "God, I don't even know.
How did I get here?"
You know, and it's like, because you were unconscious. But if somebody had pulled out on you halfway there, you'd have snapped out
of it. Snapped out, yeah.
So that's your conscious mind.
Sure.
And he said, but most of the time, unless you're conscious and something snaps you out of it, most of this stuff's just running automatically.
Mm.
And that was the first time I ever knew anything about how this stuff worked.
Of course.
You know, so, and then I got into Tony Robbins and I did NLP, hypnotherapy, timeline therapy, Sedona method, Landmark Forum. And I trained to a high level in most of those things.
Sure.
But I was still stuck.
Right.
So I had about 13 years of self-development, you know what I mean?
When you say stuck, what do you mean by stuck?
Oh, I just wasn't showing up as me.
Right.
And I think we all have a sense of what we're capable of, and we know if we're scared in situations,
sure.
we know if we're holding ourselves back.
Sure.
And for instance, I didn't go on holiday with my mates when I was a teenager at stuff, so I was so scared I got we got attacked by a gang of lads when I was 16, which kicked off my PTSD from being a kid.
Right.
So I just didn't go out, didn't do anything, didn't want to go anywhere, didn't, you know, so I know that, I knew how limited I was.
Sure.
You know, when I first came to Sheffield, my mate dragged me along to a networking meeting. And, you know,
that's an eye-opener, isn't it, the first time?
And you know when you get that creeping death, when you see it going around the thing and it's coming towards you?
Go next.
I just ran out.
You ran out?
I ran out of the room. I couldn't speak. Really? I tried to talk and nothing came out of my mouth. Sure. So I froze. We'll talk more about fight, flight and freeze in a minute. Yep. But I froze and I just ran out.
Really?
You know, I had another episode about BNI, which I hinted at earlier.
Yes.
So I helped start a chapter. I was friends with Neary, and so Neary asked me if I'd help start this chapter. So we started a chapter in Chesterfield. There was three of us. So because it was three people, I kind of felt okay and a bit safe. And then there was four, then there was five. And then because I was good at motivational speaking kind of thing, they asked me if I'd do the training spot.
Right.
So I went, yeah, all right, cool. Okay, I can do that. So I started doing it and I loved it. 10 minutes every week. I had to think of something to do a little training thing on. Loved it. Then there was 10, then there was 15, and I think we got up to about 18, 19.
You started freaking.
No, I was fine.
Oh, you were fine, yeah.
I was fine because I'd met every one of them one-on-one.
Ah, okay. So
and they were slowly introduced, and then I felt like I belonged already, which was a thing I never felt. I didn't feel like I didn't belong. So I used to use the kind of, I'd get other people to introduce me and let them know I'm cool, I'm good. Because I didn't feel that inside.
Sure.
You know, so I relied on other people to. So anyway, then all of a sudden we're doing this open day, and to the open day we were like a really vibrant chapter, so everybody invited everybody they knew, so we ended up with 80 people there. And like all of a sudden I found out on the morning or the day before or something that the person who does the training role is the MC.
yes.
So and then I get there and Neary goes, don't worry mate, all you've got to do is read this out. Now my deepest fear came from reading something out at school.
So you literally
so
just
that was
snap
the
back.
Worst thing I could have done.
Wow.
I got about three sentences in and I just froze again. Yeah. And I just put the mic down and put the paper down and walked out and I never went back.
Never went back, really.
And I'd spent 18 months building that.
Oh my word.
So I knew these are the kind of things that I'm talking about when I said hold me back.
Yes.
You know, and I felt them all the time. I felt myself not speaking my truth, not speaking up, not being myself.
Not being yourself.
You know, because
so when you say that, like you have a feeling like you could be more, and you could be more of a person, more of a achieve more, be more.
Yeah, definitely like, achieve more.
Like, does because I imagine a lot of people will feel that way, would they not?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think when the people I work with a lot definitely feel like that.
Right.
You know, they always have a sense of they're not being who they really are.
Sure.
And funny enough, my company used to be called Be Who You Really Are. And that felt like an instruction to me,
sure,
as much as anything, just me to learn to be who I really am, so I can teach other people, you know, show them how to set yourself free from the invisible kind of cage you build. Yeah, the Matrix. Yeah, prison without bars that you can't see or touch or taste.
That's
from
the safest prison in the world.
Exactly. And I think we've all got one to a certain extent,
yeah.
You know, because we're all capable of
being conditioned.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Massively, and deeply, deeply conditioned with pain, with emotional pain.
Right.
That's the. I mean, most people will stop themselves far more than they'd let anyone else stop them.
Mm.
You know, and that comes from just keeping yourself in that cage.
Sure.
You know, but it's difficult. It's a difficult thing when you can't see it.
Of course.
You see the effects of it, and you see that you're probably not taking an action. Like it might be, you see a pretty girl in a bar, but you dare not go and talk to her.
Ooh, you know, I bet there's a lot of people can relate to that as well.
Yeah. And that was me. I couldn't talk to girls at all.
So that's linked to what, some rejection in the past?
I don't know specifically with that one. I think it was just a general not feeling good about myself and not expecting anyone to like me.
Sure.
I had a big trauma when I was a kid. I got blamed for something at school I didn't do. I got bullied by a teacher for it.
Really?
And then I'd had enough, so I ran home and told my mum and dad and they didn't believe me because I'd been playing up at school because I hated it. I was only 7.
Right.
So at the age of 7, I lost my friends, my family, my neighbours. I come from a big council estate. Everybody called me a liar.
Oh, no way.
And my way of reacting with that was I went mute for 3 weeks and refused to talk to anybody.
Oh, really?
Now, as we were talking about earlier, when things were bad enough, you blocked them out. The only reason I know this story is my mum told me it.
Got you.
When my mum were dying, she told me it, so she must have carried it with her, knowing that it had gone very wrong.
Really?
because after that, I went from the happiest carefree kid at school who got the stranger danger chat all the time because I had just told everyone I loved them and wanted to be hugging everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
To shut down completely, wouldn't go out of the house, wouldn't do anything. And I had PTSD, anxiety, panic attacks, like echoing voices in my head.
Really?
I didn't know whether I was awake or asleep. I didn't sleep because of the
nightmares. At 7?
At 7.
Really? Wow.
And no one knows. It was in the 70s. What do you do with someone in the 70s? They just took me to the doctors who told me to stop touching my nose because I had a habit of doing this.
Right, right.
And he went, stop doing that. It looks silly. And that was it. That was it.
Really?
Yeah, that was my whole sort of help through that. So, but then my mum got called into school and there was a teacher called Mrs. Clark. I can still remember. She was only about 25, but she seemed really old at the time. I was 7.
It's crazy, that, isn't it, though? Isn't it? You look back. Well, the thing this morning is that, like, 60 now, it's not even old.
No.
You know, I remember 60 years old when I was a kid, that was old. Sorry for anyone that's 60, but, like, it's the new 35.
Definitely. Well, I'm 50 this weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited about it.
Exactly, like, party on.
So what? Halfway through, I made it.
Yes.
Didn't look good at times. So.
Keep on. Yeah, keep on. You got the same amount of time to come again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But
at least
without the cage this
without
time.
Without the cage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah.
So it's all good. So yeah, my mum got called into school by Mrs. Clark and she said, is your son remedial or something? Because he's like, they'd probably call it special needs now or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And she went, no, and she explained what had happened and somehow she got me out of it.
Right.
I don't know what she did, I can't really remember it. I can remember her, but I can't remember any of that. But then I found school a nightmare. It was just difficult, really, really difficult. And I got bullied, I was really easy prey because I was super sensitive to everything because I'd got that stuff going on in me now and I was terrified of people not believing me. So I thought the way to get around people not believing me was to exaggerate, which is just lying.
Which is so lying, yeah.
So then I just ended up, it was a nightmare.
Right.
So yeah, so all of that created that kind of horror inside me and that expectation that I might get blamed for things I didn't do, I might get taken wrong was a big thing for me.
Mm.
You might not believe me was a massive thing for me, which is really interesting because that's kind of what's showing up for us now, that people don't believe what we do is as powerful as it is.
Yes, yep.
So it's interesting that I get to deal with that on a...
You've gone back to where it started.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So yeah, it's all kind of that.
Do you think that's by accident or by design that you've actually ended up here?
My personal belief on that is that I had to go through that to be doing what I'm doing.
Yes.
So I'm actually grateful for it, which might sound weird to people who haven't been through something like that.
I think it's powerful, isn't it? Yeah.
But I am very grateful because what I do is my favourite thing. You know what I mean? Working with people on this level.
Amazing.
My favourite thing with human beings is deep connection.
Yes.
However that is.
Yes.
You know, and that was what clubbing was because drugs give you deep connection.
Right.
It gets
right.
all the bullshit out of the way and people actually talk proper stuff to each other.
Yeah.
You know? Not, oh, it's a nice day, isn't it? Or whatever. You know?
Yeah, no one cares.
Yeah, yeah. And I crave that deep connection with humans, right? So my job is to sit with humans and have the deepest, deepest connections you can possibly have. And I wouldn't get to do that unless I'd been through all that.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for it in a weird kind of way.
Of course.
You know?
And I think it's important to be grateful for it, isn't it? Because it is a gift for you to, I mean, like you say, how can you help somebody if you've not been through some level of that?
You can't. Yeah. You get to a point at times where people know you've read it in a book or, you know, and if you get that sense with somebody who's trying to help you, even if they're doing good, it can turn you off.
Sure.
It can be just like, what do you know?
Sure, sure.
What do you know? But if somebody's walked that path that you're trying to walk, you trust them. It's like you wouldn't go on a tour guide, you wouldn't go on a tour with somebody who's never been to that town before.
Yeah. They've read a book about it though.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've read this book, you know, but if they've actually know everything there is to know about that town because they've been through that so many times.
Of course.
You trust them.
But we have been conditioned that way though, aren't we, Tim, though? Like how we learn is through reading it.
Mm.
Do you know, from school. Do you know, we're taught like, if you can recite this better than the next person, you'll get better grades.
Mm.
So I think that makes sense why people would do that, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like if they read a book and they think that they've got the information, they can pass it on, or if they go to a seminar, you know, like or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I've always had I don't want to get into this because it's a contentious subject, but I had a problem around the Bible.
Right.
Let's just say.
Right.
And to me, it didn't make sense. Right. I was like a loving God that judges us. Kind of just didn't make sense to me.
Sure.
And that whole kind of. with what I was going through as a kid, I was getting taught it at the same time, and I was just like, this does not make sense.
Right.
So then I made the connection in my 7 year old head that people can lie in books.
Oh really? Right, okay.
So then I never liked reading, and I never trusted stuff that came out of books.
Right, that's very interesting.
Which is really interesting. And I only realised this 2 days ago. I was having a discussion with Tracy, my business partner, and she was saying about a big breakthrough she'd had reading stuff out of this book that she loves. And I said to her, I've just had a breakthrough myself. Yeah, I've just seen that I don't trust stuff in books.
Yeah.
Information in books, because anyone could have written anything.
Of course.
You know, and it's, and that's why I love what we do, because it's truth.
Sure.
It's the person's truth.
It's the person's truth. It's not you telling them the information.
Nothing.
It's,
I don't tell them anything at all.
Yeah.
I tell them how to do the techniques, how to be safe.
Right.
And then I ask them questions and guide them through whatever they're coming up with.
Whatever it is, yeah.
But I never, ever, ever put anything in their head. It's content free from me.
Really, but I mean, that's the ultimate coaching technique, isn't it? Like, you should never tell somebody what to do. You should help them discover it themselves.
Exactly.
And I think that this is one of the things I see, because, I mean, like, coaching is an example. You know, you'll see this yourself. Like, every man and his dog's a coach now.
Oh, I know.
There's a coach for everything. You can, a coach for your food. There's a coach for your sleep. There's a coach for how you should walk, how you should stand, things you should say. There's coaching for everything right now, isn't there? It's very on trend.
Definitely.
And that's fascinating to see. And I think that's great in one respect, but I think at the same time, it's what information is correct?
Yeah.
What information is right? What information is just a regurgitated version of somebody else's?
I know. I've got a little bit of beef with the coaching industry over the last couple of years. It's just got people teaching people how to make money who've only ever made money out of people teaching money how to make money who ever made.
Yeah.
And it just, nobody's actually done anything. Well, there's a lot, I'm not saying everybody, but there's a good deal of people who've probably not actually done anything.
Sure, sure.
They've just learned it on a course.
Of course,
and
of
then,
course.
Especially things like Udemy, you can get certificates for 25 quid.
You can NLP.
Yeah.
25 quid, you've got NLP, there you go.
Yeah. And to be honest, the stuff that I learned on courses, I'm sure you'll be the same. I learned far more just sitting down with people.
Yeah.
And working through things. Yeah.
Well, I imagine to a degree it's probably similar, but I learn probably just as much from my clients as they learn from me.
Massively.
And that's just, like, I feel like really grateful for that, for the opportunity to be involved 100%. In their journey. And, you know, it's an amazing thing to do.
To me, it's always win-win.
Yeah.
My mantra is, if you win, I win.
Yes.
And that's how I sit down with somebody.
Sure.
If they win, I'm winning.
Yeah.
And that can be just from the fact that they're a client.
Sure.
Or from the fact I learned something so deep from them. And I'll tell them if I do. I'm like, thank you for that. Wow.
Yeah.
That's just resonated in me.
Of course.
And when you first start doing this work, people show up with your stuff all the time. Right? So as they're clearing it, I learn to clear it in myself.
Yes.
So then you're getting double whammy. You're clearing yourself, which makes you a much better coach.
Sure.
Oh, I don't call it coach, but we call ourselves trainers,
because
we train the person how to do it. But it makes us much better at healing, because then the trouble is, if you're reacting to something somebody's saying, you're not there with them 100%.
Okay.
You're kind of in your own system reacting to
it.
So the cleaner you are,
sure, the better
you are, because you'll go to places, you'll take them places you daren't go if you've never been there.
Do you ever absorb
any
of theirs? And it creates,
no,
so it doesn't create like a new belief system for you, thinking, actually.
Oh, well, maybe I'm preempting you a little bit. I thought you were saying, do you ever take their energy on? That's what I thought you were.
Oh, no, sorry. So like, maybe there's a belief system that they have about something and you've helped them to clear it.
Mm.
Do you ever then question and think, actually?
If I had something similar.
Yes.
And I could suddenly see it from a different perspective, because now I see how that was holding them back,
right,
and now they've seen it from here,
right,
and spoken it out loud, and I've gone, actually,
right,
that might work for me. I'll try it on.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I'm totally open.
Sure.
Totally open to that. But what I thought you were going to say is, do we ever take their energy on?
Because people always
ask that.
Sure.
And it's like, I don't see it working like that. So no.
Is that possible? Is that even a thing?
I think if you think it is, yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because everything's energy, isn't it? Like, it's just moving from form to form, I believe.
Yeah,
in my understanding,
in my belief in the person is, it's within them though.
So the energy can't be transferred.
So that energy is transmuting back in within them.
Okay.
So say for instance, let me explain the splinter, because explaining the splinter might make this a bit clearer. So we were talking earlier, and the reason I use a splinter is because I work with a lot of young people, a lot of people whose English isn't their first language.
Sure.
And I like simplify. I like simple things. I don't like it complicated, you know, and it was quite complicated the way we were taught it. So I came up with a splinter. So if you think about a wooden splinter, right, and most people have had one. So a big piece of wood comes along, hits you, small bit breaks off, goes inside, and it hurts.
Yep.
So you now keep that away from people and yourself. You try not to touch it.
Sure.
So eventually it will kind of heal over. Now you can touch it, and it's kind of all right. But if someone comes and grabs you right on it, you still jump.
Okay.
Because it's still in there,
it's
shot.
There. Yeah.
Right? So emotional splinter, right? Emotion comes along.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got so much we can deal with.
Sure.
Right? So up to this level's kind of okay.
Yeah.
It'll kind of come in and flow out. Uh-huh. Anything above that is trauma.
Right.
So trauma, in my definition, is more than you can deal with in that moment.
Got you.
So we look at trauma like it's a massive thing, and it can be.
What would be a good example of that, by the way, just for...
So trauma could be a car accident,
right.
It could be getting attacked,
okay.
But it could also be someone doing your head in all day long,
sure.
all day long, all
sure.
day long,
sure.
all day long, then somebody just pulls out at you in the car and you boom.
Right.
It's
right.
just more than you can deal with emotionally in that moment.
So what most people, and we were talking about this earlier, one of the biggest fears that people have here in the UK is public speaking.
Yeah.
So trauma would be getting laughed at school.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
definitely. Yeah. And the humiliation of that, and then all of a sudden you zoom in on everyone's face looking at you and they're all laughing. But also you can get that really, really wrong. You know,
right.
you might think they're laughing at you.
Yes.
So Tracy's got an awesome story of a little girl she worked with. And this little girl couldn't go for a number two at the toilet for about a week. And a mum got her to see her, and she found out that what had happened is she went to sing at school, and as she walked up to the mic, it fed back, and all the kids laughed, just because it squealed.
Right.
And she thought they were laughing at her, and that's what had caused it.
Right, right.
So when she went and cleared that energy out,
sure.
she could then see that the kids were just laughing at the mic.
At the mic, right, right.
You know, so we can get things wrong.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
because in that moment, in that intensity, we give things meanings. We have to give things meanings.
Right.
Right. So like I was talking to you about the car.
Yes.
Right, when we drive to the other end. The reason we would snap back in as it pulled out is because we're giving that a meaning.
Sure.
That's dangerous.
Sure. So just for clarity for people, we're talking about like when you're driving a car, you're on autopilot for the most of the journey.
That's it.
And then obviously if something happens, like someone pulls out, you're snapped into consciousness.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, if you think about what drives that mechanism, right, you must be giving that a meaning. Otherwise, how would you know the difference between that and nothing?
Yes.
Right? So we are meaning-giving machines. We give everything meanings.
Meaning-giving machines, I like that.
We need to do it, right? It's part of survival. It's like, is that gang of people still on that street corner with hoodies on a good option, or should I cross the road?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we're doing it all the time, you know, and there's nothing wrong with
that. We're not aware that we're doing it.
No, but we are doing it all the time,
all
right?
All the time.
So everyone's looking at me, what does it mean? Right?
Sure.
It means like they're judging me, I'm stupid,
sure.
or blah, blah, blah,
but
blah.
That
blah.
Might not necessarily be the case, and probably isn't.
No, they're just laughing at the mics, really.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and it's like, so this is what happens. So that goes in as a splinter.
So this emotional splinter comes along. Like emotional.
So this emotion comes along.
Yeah.
We deal with so much. This bit we can't deal with, we take it inside.
Sure. Splinter snaps off.
It goes inside.
Sure.
Now we stay away from it.
Yep.
And we keep everyone else away from it.
Okay.
I mean, we kind of think it heals over, but it never really heals.
Got you.
So again, if someone comes and presses us on it,
yep.
so if I have to go and stand up and read,
yep.
that fires that splinter off again.
Yep.
And they, before I know it, I'm reacting emotionally
mm-hmm.
in ways that I don't even understand half the time.
Sure.
And I'll act, you often hear people say things like, God, it just, that isn't me. I acted in a way that wasn't me.
Right.
It just, I'm not like, I don't know what I said. And people go, oh, God, that wasn't like them, you know.
This
is where this kind of thing comes from, because you're not acting consciously,
sure,
you're acting unconsciously.
Like out of character is what people would say, yeah.
Now, the thing is, you don't just get one splinter. Nobody gets through without getting these things. You know, we get overwhelmed all the time.
Of course.
You call this another thing, overwhelm.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's just more than you can deal with. So every time you'll take these things in, especially if they're significant.
Mm-hmm.
So then what we end up doing is tiptoeing through the middle, trying not to touch any of these things, you know, because whenever we touch them, we feel rubbish, whatever.
And we don't want to feel rubbish, do we?
No. So we do it. So we kind of create, these are the bars to the cage, by the way.
Yeah.
Because these are the things you don't want to go and touch.
Okay, yeah.
So these become the invisible cage.
Yes.
Right? But thing is, with a splinter, what's the best thing to do with a splinter?
We've got to get it out.
Pull it out. So this is what we teach, is how to pull the splinters out.
Splinter out, yeah.
Because once you take the splinter out, it no longer hurts.
Mm.
Now you don't have to stop people. And to answer your question in a very long way, now that energy that you were using to hold that in place transmutes back into you.
Okay.
And becomes back in part of your energy.
Sure.
So like so many people who are exhausted, right? I had like adrenal fatigue and thyroid hyperthyroidism. When I went on the course to learn how to do this, I came away from that weekend with about 50% energy back, just like that.
Really?
Because I'm not holding on to all that emotional baggage anymore. Because it's like carrying a bag of rocks on your back.
You know,
but when you just dump them, you're like, people always say that, I feel light.
Right.
After a session, I feel more, even lighter.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Because you're no longer carrying that. And it's a real thing you're carrying around. It's
emotional baggage, yeah.
Emotional baggage, it is literally. See, we have a lot of the language for this, but we don't fully understand.
No one's really understanding it as such, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Fascinating. I mean, like humans just as designer are just incredible.
Oh, bonkers.
Yeah.
Crazy. Really, really cool. And when they're working perfectly, it's amazing, but some of those systems just get overloaded.
Sure.
And this is what gets overloaded with the splinters.
Of course.
So when you have people with things like, I don't like labels, like anxiety, depression, fears, phobias, panic, blah, 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 blah. It's all the same thing, right? And the reason I know it's all the same thing is because I do exactly the same thing no matter what somebody shows up with.
Right.
And they can show up with combinations and all kinds of stuff.
Sure.
And there's no cure for it because blah, blah, blah. But what we're doing, we're not curing anything.
No.
Because nothing's wrong.
Sure, sure.
All we're doing is taking splinters out and the body rebalances itself.
Oh, yeah.
And you end up, because what tends to happen at first is that splinter is triggering the emotional memory, right? So it fires it off. When you take the splinter out, there's things still in there, but there's no trigger.
Right.
But then, as you probably know, the brain, due to neuroplasticity, can create connections, but it can also prune connections.
Right. Okay.
So what you forget, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's what that is.
Right.
So the example I always use of that is my next door neighbour was Polish, came over in the war. I had a Polish guy, one side German the other, which was a bizarre combination to grow up in between. But they actually liked each other.
The German didn't try to invade him, did
they? No. We kept it, we were no man's land. So he came over in 1940, whatever. Anyway, I ended up with a Polish girlfriend. So I was like, oh, I've got to take her around to see Michael.
Yes.
Took her around and she went, blah, 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 and he went,
I've got no idea what she said.
And he went, I don't understand.
Oh, so he's lost it.
He'd lost his own language.
Really?
Because he'd been here 50 years. You know what I mean? So in 50 years, he'd forgot his own language.
Language.
So that's how successfully your brain can prune things.
Wow.
So then what happens is when you take that trigger out, that thing no longer fires.
Mm.
And things, cells that fire together, wire together, right? So that's what creates that synaptic connection, right? But when you don't fire it, it'll gradually shrink and prune.
Right.
So then what happens is eventually you can't even remember having that fear.
Right.
So it becomes like, it's weird. When I tell people about the stuff that I used to struggle with, I feel like I'm lying. Mm. I feel like I'm talking about somebody else. Cause
that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff.
Sure.
It's really powerful stuff.
So that if it's been pruned, as you explained, and eventually it's been forgotten, can it be relearned?
Yeah. Yeah, because that mechanism's still there.
Right.
So learnt
the
it in
fear
the first.
Could come back, would you say? Or
you could reinstall another fear. That actual fear doesn't come back.
Right, okay. But something that's similar could.
Any other fear can get installed.
Right.
If you then go and, God forbid, have a pile up on the motorway or something, you may be scared of driving a car.
Right.
You know, because that fear is still relevant and that fear is valid within your mind, you know. And it's not that you can't remember the things, by the way. It actually becomes your wisdom.
Got you.
Now, because I got attacked by a gang of lads, I know not to go like that when someone calls me a name.
Right. So it becomes a truth to you.
So it becomes like some useful information, but there's no longer any emotional attachment to it. So when I think about it, it's just something that happened to me as a kid.
Right, okay.
And now I've got
you don't feel fear towards it, or you're not scared of it because
No. But I'm probably more wary of it than somebody who had never had it happen.
Sure.
Because I can remember it happening.
But it's not affecting you?
No.
Right, okay.
No.
Yes. That makes sense. So what we're talking about in I suppose in a way that for the masses to understand is a software update, aren't we?
Perfect.
We upgrade, like you get a new phone, it's got new software.
Yeah.
Once a year, you get a new software update. what you're talking about is in essence the same. And in fact, you call it human software engineering, don't you?
Well, the original modality we learnt was human software engineering from an awesome guy called Tom Stone. Hi, Tom.
And, hey, Tom.
And that was about upgrading your inner software.
Right.
You know, and that's literally what you're doing. But what you don't realise is you do things like Tony Robbins and all the stuff you learn, all the books you read, all the self-development things you go on, all the workshops you go on, that you can't apply.
Okay.
You know, you teach somebody something and they just can't seem to apply it.
Sure.
All of a sudden, when you shift this stuff out of the way, you can apply anything.
Right.
Because the reason you can't apply things isn't because you're stupid or don't understand it or whatever. It's usually because that's taking you out of your safety zone. Mm. So I'm not a big fan of comfort zone. Right, comfort zone to me is the least comfortable place in the world. So why would you call it a comfort zone? Yeah. It's a safety zone.
Sure.
Right? If you don't feel safe to do something, your body's programmed to stop you doing it.
Right.
You know, so you may understand a technique somebody tells you to do for your business or for whatever, but understanding it and actually applying it are two different things.
Right.
Because if you're applying it means you're not safe.
Yes.
You won't do it. So this is the realm we work in, is safety. So if you use Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which we use a sort of adapted version of, you've got survival, safety, love and belonging, self-esteem and other people's esteem for you, and then self-development.
Right.
You know, and like I said to you earlier, most people start at the top.
At the top.
So they built this amazing pyramid. Imagine if the Egyptians had built the top of the pyramid first.
Exactly. Yeah, with no solid foundation. Really.
Just
yeah.
levitated it.
Yeah.
That'd freak out.
Well, yeah, that'd give them something else to ponder.
That would be, yeah. That would definitely aliens.
How did they do that? It's got to be aliens.
It's definitely aliens, that. Or sound. Could be sound.
Could be sound, yeah. Vibrations.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. But the thing is, and that's what I did. I spent 13 years building this.
Mm,
and things like B&I happened.
Yeah.
Other things like that happened.
Right.
You know, the amount of things where I'd create something, especially to do with me studying in front of people, and then I'd go and stand in front of people, and the version of it in my head, how it was going to be compared to when I actually got there, was so wildly different.
Really?
Because imagining it in my head, didn't press the button, didn't press my splinters.
Right, right.
It wasn't until I got there, and when I got there, I would just melt down. Yeah. Absolutely.
So they activated you.
Yeah. And what they do is they trigger off a thing in our brain called the amygdala.
Mm.
So there's a term coined in Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence, called the amygdala hijack.
Right.
Which is a perfect description of what goes on.
What's going on.
But I like doing the layman's version of it, because that's even a little bit technical. So in a layman's version of it, right, you've got, your brain's got two main processing parts. You've got your emotional brain, the limbic system.
Yep.
And then you've got your neocortex, which is your thinking, rational mind.
Sure.
This is the irrational, non-thinking mind. It's
the limbic.
The limbic. Yep, it limbic. Processes emotion.
Yep.
So what's usually happening is information comes in through our senses, goes up the spinal cord, goes in through the amygdala, which is part of the limbic system. The amygdala's job is to check out, is this safe?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't feel safe, well, first of all, if you do feel safe, it just lets the information through. So it goes through to your cortex and you can process the information and you can think and see and hear and everything works normally, right? If it doesn't feel safe, the first thing it does is shuts the information flow down to your thinking mind.
Sure.
Then it fires off your fight, flight or freeze response.
Yep.
So now you're left without a brain to think with. And also what's really interesting is you think about your higher cognitive functions. They're things like hearing, sight, speech.
Sure. Yeah.
So why do you think people can't speak when they get in front of people? Because this
it's
is
shut
firing
down.
Off. It's shut down.
Right.
And this is really funny, because when we discovered this, it was completely an accident. I was reading a marketing book and came across it.
Sure.
You know, and I said to Tracy, I told her about it, and she went, oh my God, I was on a call this morning and somebody said something and I felt judged, and all of a sudden I couldn't understand what everyone was saying.
Really?
I was like, wow. And then I remembered a version with me as well. I was really stressed out this day trying to get something finished. And I said to Chrissy, my other half, are you moving my mouse? She went, no. So I tore the house apart looking for my mouse. And I was going mental. I was like, and I went back upstairs and it was sat on the mouse mat.
Sat there.
Because what your brain will do is, if it's getting no input, it'll remember what it last saw.
Right.
And obviously, the last time I looked there, the
it
mouse
wasn't there. Yeah.
And it was like, and I was like, whoa.
They call it a scotoma, that, don't they?
Yes. Yeah.
So it don't want you to be a liar, so it makes it disappear.
Yeah. So it's like, that's how powerful this system is.
Yeah.
Right.
It's incredible.
So if you're not feeling safe, right, you can't. you can't even be yourself at all. And like I said to you earlier, there are shades of grey. It's not black and white. If you feel a little bit unsafe, you might be shutting it down a bit. But if you feel terrified, like people who have panic attacks, that's what a panic attack is. Mm. That's that on 100%.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then it'll do anything to get you out there. And I remember them. You feel like you're going to die. You know, your vision closes down, you're sweating, your breathing's going, you know. Mm. You don't care about anything out there.
Sure.
You're just dealing with yourself in here.
Yes, yes.
But there is, like I said, there's varying amounts of that. And that's what fear is. Fear's that on probably 10%, sure. 15%. That, you know, okay, yeah. There's all different levels of that. But when you look at it through a nice simple lens like this, that's what we do with everything. So I don't care what someone shows up with, what's holding the back of everything, this is where we look. We look on the hierarchy to see where they are. And then we find out where, and it's usually safety.
Yes.
Because safety is physical safety and emotional safety.
Sure.
It's usually emotional safety.
Yes.
So if somebody doesn't feel safe in a situation, that's why I said it's better to call it a safety zone.
Of course.
Then you'll do whatever you can to not be feeling that.
Yes.
You know?
It's interesting that, I mean, one of the things that I was talking about recently with somebody was that even when you're buying items of whether it's clothing, whether it's shoes, expensive watches, etc., that actually in essence is a form of safety. I and that's what my point I was saying is, and it was like, well, why is that? Surely it's not safety, is it? It's more about showing off. It's like, yeah, but that's safety, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you show off,
fit in,
and you fit in, yeah, you feel safe.
Yeah.
Or especially if you feel like you're the leader of the pack.
Yes.
Like, they're not going to challenge you, are they?
Yeah. Definitely.
And it's crazy how we create these stories, don't we, to make things fit.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. And then we the trouble is, when you make any decision, you make it emotionally first, and you back it up with logic.
Right.
Right, so that's okay as long as you can access your emotions fully. Because your emotion, how many decisions do you made?
As I bang the mic.
How many decisions do you make where your heart's gone, no. Yeah. And your head's gone, oh, it'll be all right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you go, oh, go with my head. And then it's like, oh my God, what have I done? And then,
the head's always wrong.
Yeah, your heart's always right.
Yeah.
Right, so when you can, but the trouble is, there's a caveat to that. That's if you can go and access it.
Got you.
So if you've got splinters in you and they're significant or not that significant, if you don't want to go in there and feel, and a good indication of this is if you've got a busy mind. If you've got a busy mind, I guarantee you, you've got splinters going on.
Really?
Because you don't want to be inside, so you go in your head. Mm. Right, and then the reason I know this is, as soon as you pull splinters out, people are like, oh my God, my mind's calmed down.
Right.
And it's like, and they've tried meditating for years or whatever.
I was just about to say that, so does meditation help though, would you say over there?
I don't think that's the use of meditation.
Right.
I think meditation's really powerful.
Sure.
But for me, meditation's about connecting to yourself and to whatever else is out there.
Sure, sure, sure.
Whatever you believe in.
Yeah.
To a higher power or greater, whatever.
Yeah.
To me personally, that's what meditation's for, is going and connecting primarily to yourself.
Sure, yeah.
You know, trying to quieten your mind with meditation doesn't work for many people.
Right, okay.
Because the analogy I always use, it's like if you've got a rash on your arm, there's a fair chance that's a digestive problem.
Yes, okay.
Right, but what do you do when you go to the doctors to get your cream to put on your arm?
To put on your arm, yeah.
Same with this. If you've got thoughts spinning around your head, what people try and do is calm the thoughts down, but it's not that. That's the manifestation, right? The manifestation of having some emotional pain within you is it drives thought.
Okay.
So we've got a thing within us called the think-feeling loop. I don't know if you're into Joe Dispenza at all.
I'm familiar with him, but I've not really followed much of his stuff.
Right, if you like this kind of stuff, he's amazing, he's fascinating. And because he's like a proper scientist, it's really good to get the information. So he's got this thing called the think-feeling loop that's designed to keep you in balance.
Okay.
So imagine you're looking at a beautiful scene, right? So your body, your brain makes beautiful chemicals. Mm-hmm. These beautiful chemicals go into your body feels beautiful.
Yeah.
Your head's always monitoring how you feel. Mm-hmm. It goes, oh, I feel beautiful. I'll filter out more beautiful thoughts.
Okay.
So you stay in that loop.
Yep.
It's designed to keep us level, you know? But if you're suffering, if you like looking at something horrific, your brain makes horrific chemicals, your body feels horrific, your brain's monitoring your body and goes, oh, horrific, I'll filter out some horrific thoughts.
Right.
So we get stuck in that loop.
Sure.
Right? So you've got to remember, if you've got emotional pain within you, mm-hmm. your body's already feeding crappy.
Got you.
You're going to be making crappy chemicals,
sure.
feeding crappy, your brain's monitoring it, so you filter out crappy thoughts. and this is tends to be what that's what my depression was.
Right.
Was just that I couldn't see. My friend said to me once, he said, you're walking through this most beautiful valley and there's a stream by the side with crystal clear glistening water and there's beautiful birds in the sky and there's clouds and there's all these gorgeous flowers and then you look down on the floor and there's this little bit of dog shit. Mm. And he said, you're just rubbing your face in it and staring at that, and that's what it was. But sure. That kind of explains it.
Yes.
Because I had so much emotional pain in me,
of course,
that all I could filter out was crap. So I was just, everything I saw looked wrong. I looked for trouble everywhere.
Yeah.
And I saw it, you'll find it.
Yeah.
You know, the world's like Google.
You search for it, you'll find it.
True. Don't mean it's true.
It's just, what you've just said then just reminds me back to, I just worked with a professor, and one of the things that he said to me, when I first met him, he says, what is it you do then, John? So I said, well, I'm a business coach, I do a bit of speaking and stuff like that, I try and help people, inspire them, motivate them. He went, oh, okay, so what you do then, John? He says, you help people feel better about themselves, and then you help them understand that the world's actually better than how it currently is, and then you show them opportunities and how to get it. And I'm like, that's just summarised what I do incredibly well.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I like that.
And I suppose that's exactly the same, either, what you're saying here, isn't it? You're helping them to change the way that they feel about themselves. You're showing them that the world actually is better than its current situation. It can be better if you look for it, and then you're showing them where to look.
I don't
how
show...
Or how to look.
No, they naturally get that.
Right, right.
So the difference, like, I can only tell you my experience of it, right? Sure. I see it in them, but I don't know what that felt like.
Yes.
But my experience was, I went to London, exhausted, probably about 30% energy. I couldn't get through a day without sleeping. Mm. I told Tom before I went there, I don't know if I'll be able to do the whole day, because I was that shot, I couldn't. I can't remember what I released. There was something... Oh, it was the grief of my mum and dad, because I lost my mum and dad within 3 months of each other I'd looked after my dad for 3.5 years. He had a stroke, and then my mum ran herself into the ground looking after him, bless her, and we lost them both really close together. And because I do what I do, this was before I did this, but I still did NLP and stuff,
because
I was the coachy kind of one, I was the strong one, so I just buried it.
Deep, really deep.
Like, to the point where it didn't bother me at the time, thought it didn't bother me at the time. That's what actually burnt all my adrenals and everything else, was hanging on to that.
Really?
And it got to just before break, and there was like he got the slide up with the agenda, and I saw after the break it was grief, and something started bubbling in me, and I was like, shit,
right.
I want to get out of here.
Really?
And all I wanted to do was run away. And he just suddenly appeared in front of me and went, are you all right? And I must have not looked all right. And I went, no. He went, what's going on? So I told him, and he said, you'll be okay. It'll be all right, honestly. He said, do you want me to get you a coffee? Do you want to stay here? I said, yeah. He said, do you want me to get you a coffee? I went, yeah. So he went and got me a coffee and come back, and he said, what happened? So I told him everything, and he was like, just trust it. You'll be all right. So as we started doing the technique, I could feel like something around my solar plexus, and it felt like a balloon. Mm. And it felt like there was something pushing up under this balloon, but there felt like a thin layer of something on top, and it felt really sad, right? And as it was going, I felt tears rolling down my face, and I never cry ever, because I've been shut down since I was a kid. And I felt tears rolling down my face, and I just felt the saddest feeling I've ever felt in my life. And then it burst, and then this joy came out of me, and it's the love I'd been holding back, not wanting to think about them, and I hadn't even thought about them. When it was their birthdays or the day they passed or whatever, I wouldn't remember till 4 or 5 days later. Then I'd beat myself up for forgetting. And I was just trying to block it out. And all of a sudden, all of that burst
all
out.
At once.
And I just sat, and I was literally shaking. And then afterwards, he came over, he goes, you all right? And I went, I don't know. And he said, close your eyes. And he did this grounding technique with me. And I opened my eyes, and it was like someone had doubled the intensity of all the colors, the brightness. Because you can't selectively numb out.
Right.
When you numb out, it's across the board.
Right.
Right. So you numb the good stuff and the bad stuff. Mm. You numb the
all up everything. At once,
So I'd been numbing out for so long, probably longer, probably since I was a kid. And I walked out into London, and London used to annoy me because it was so busy and smoggy and the people, and I just walked out and I was like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And like went down onto the tube station and I just wanted to hug everybody and be with everybody, and I was speaking to everybody on the tube and they thought I was weird because I was in London and you shouldn't really do that. But I didn't care, I just wanted to connect. And I was like, it was like the best drug I'd ever had in my life. Right. And that felt like that for 3 or 4 days afterwards. But then you kind of normalise, that becomes your new normal.
Yeah, yeah, you level up.
And then you level up. So then it's like, okay, what's next?
Right. Give me some more.
And then the next big one was when I went on the coach training course. Right. I overheard somebody on the next table talking about authority figures and it triggered me. And then I'd had a big thing around authority figures, which I think a lot of people have as well, and cleared that. And that was a giant one as well. But nobody taught me how to think. Nobody taught me how to be or anything about how to show up or anything. It was just all of a sudden I felt unbridled. Sure. I felt like I could show up there.
Yes.
And especially, speak up. A lot of mine came up in my throat. And throat's around, because there's the metaphysical connection as well, where stuff comes up in your body gives you a massive clue about what it is.
Sure.
So stuff in throats around expression. Mm-hmm. It's either stuff you're saying or don't say, or you want to say other stuff, or you're stopping yourself. It's something around expression.
Sure.
Stuff in your stomach tends to be around, like you literally can't stomach it. So it's like, it tends to be conflicty.
Right,
kind of things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when you send to people, is there some kind of conflict there? When they say that, they go, yeah. You know, it freaks them out. Yeah. You know, it's like, and things in hands is about letting go.
Right.
So it tends to be when people are hanging on.
So they
if they can feel it in the hands, I'm like, do you feel like you're hanging on to this? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and right side of the body's male energy, left female.
Right.
So it'll tend to give you, if you feel it on the right, it's, if you're a man, it'll be about you or someone close to your male.
Okay.
If you're a woman, if it's left, it's you or somebody close.
Right.
Or if you're a woman and you feel it on this side, it's a man close to you.
Vice versa. Right, okay.
And it freaks people out.
Yeah,
they show up so accurately, which just fascinates me, because it's like,
the body,
how can we all encode it the same?
Yeah. But that's fascinating, isn't it? That, like, why are we all encoded the same? Why is it that all cats can prowl but they've never been taught?
Yeah.
It's just instinct, isn't it? Like, where's that code come from? Like, because it is a code, it's a DNA code, isn't it? Like, where's it come from? How have we got it?
I have no idea. But I listened to a thing with, do you know Impact Theory?
Impact Theory, Tom Bilyeu.
Tom Bilyeu, He was talking to a guy the other day, I can't remember his name, some doctor. And the doctor was saying that we're quite low down on the gene count. There was something, I can't remember, it was some kind of fly, I think.
Right.
Some kind of firefly or something. It's got more genes than we have.
Right.
But he was saying it's not just your genes, it's the combined genes of everything in your body. So all the bacteria and all the bugs and stuff that live in us is part of our genetics. And he was, I don't know how true that is, but he was talking about that, and he was like, I was like, wow, okay. But I don't think anyone's really got the answer for this stuff.
No, it's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
I remember reading, you come across Mind Valley.
Yeah.
And I remember reading one of their blogs, and they were talking about how they'd done experiments with DNA, and they were saying that they'd remove some human DNA and put it into I don't know if it's DNA or it might be something, but they'd got some form of DNA or some sort from a tree.
Right.
And the human DNA, because it was surrounded by the tree DNA, turned into tree DNA. Mm. It actually transformed into that, which is... Like, I don't know if it is DNA, but you know, that's incredible, isn't it? Like, everything is just transforming and moving and changing and altering. And it's like,
it's incredible. And it at first, when I started doing the metaphysical stuff, because I started noticing patterns, I started noticing, hang on, this always seems to be in someone's throat. So I bought a book on metaphysics.
Right.
So then, in fact, you know, Louise Hayes, You Can Heal Your... That's got some of that in
it.
And that's the original version I saw. Then I bought this more complex book.
Yeah.
And you'll have someone show up with, I don't know, the wrist hurts or something. So I'll just send them the paragraph out for wrist, and they'll come back going, I've just cried. You know, or whatever, you know, or I just had a really big emotional reaction to that. You know, and it's like, it never lies. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's powerful. So, I mean, in terms of like emotions and crying especially, like when you are, I mean, do you cry more when you're more connected or do you cry less? I mean, is crying an indication that you're emotionally strong, weak, or is this just non-relevant?
The way I look at crying is the same I look at blocking things out. As in, there's nothing wrong with doing it, but I don't think it isn't a release.
It's not a release.
I don't think so, because people cry for years over things.
Right.
You know, I think it's probably like that little thing on the top of your pressure cooker.
Sure.
That just lets that little bit out so you don't explode.
Yes.
But I know people who've dealt with grief.
That's a good term, actually, isn't it?
With grief for years and years, and they still cry all the time, you know, yet you go and release it properly, and all of a sudden they can think of that person with love.
Right. But you do have tears of joy as well, don't you?
Yeah.
So
I think crying's a natural emotional thing, but I don't think it's a release.
Right.
You know, I think it's perfectly fine to cry. It's like, I tend to cry at happy stuff more than sad stuff.
Yeah.
I think I'm a bit hardened to that stuff just from my conditioning and growing up.
Of course.
But I'll cry like a big girl. You know, if there's a happy bit in a film or something, I'm like, oh, God. And if something touches me, you know, it's like, often I'll cry with people in sessions.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because I'm just
connected.
I'm so happy for them when they let go of stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like beautiful. When you know somebody's suffered with something for
a long time,
or even a little time, if they just suffered, I can't stand watching humans suffer. It's horrible. You know, so it's my biggest, like I said, it's my biggest gift to sit and do that with people.
Of course. Incredible.
It's to be able to help somebody out of that hole, or walk from the darkness into the light, as I like to look at it, because that's how it feels.
Sure.
You know, and it is, you need someone to walk you through sometimes.
You can't do it on your own.
No.
So, and I think it's, I mean, I often say that it's very similar to The Matrix, the film. Some people depend on the system, don't they?
Yeah.
Others, they've all got the gifts, but they're waiting for something to show up to give them the right time or the right permission to be themselves, isn't it? I suppose
permission's a big thing with people. I think that's one of the. I've got pretty extreme views about society and stuff, and especially school. To me, school's like workplace conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really the. They would teach you a lot of different things if they were trying to help you get through life, in my opinion. So one of the things, I've lost my track now. What did you just say?
We're just talking about like The Matrix and the systems and depending on it, permission.
Permission, thank you. And permission, I think, is one of the things they take away from you at school.
Oh, I like it, yes.
And that's one of the things they drum into you, you've got to ask.
Stop you being creative.
Yeah.
So thinking.
Because I remember the biggest beef I had at primary school was having to ask to go to the toilet.
Mm.
And I used to just get up and walk out, and then I'd get told off, and I'd get sent to the headmaster, and all the time. And he'd say, "Why are you doing it?" I went, "Because I want the loo."
Yeah.
Well, you need to ask. Why do I need to ask?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of problems that's created there, isn't it? I think there's a lot of good though as well. I mean, I think there's a disconnect in the sense that it's not really testing your intelligence; it's testing your obedience.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like you say, it's conditioning in a way. But I think that the communication you can learn at school is incredible, isn't it? How to make friends and how to build relationships.
I think the social aspect of school, if it's not, if you've had a good experience of that,
is
powerful.
Yeah.
You know, but I also think
when are you going to use Pythagoras?
I'm a software engineer. I don't use it. You know, it's like. I think yes, but I think there's. I think a lot of people's fear of judgment comes from school.
Mm.
Because I think the whole point of school is you're judged.
Yes.
And I've worked with a few kids recently, and all of them have got so much stress and anxiety around exams.
Right, yeah.
Because
that's a modern thing though, isn't it? That's not always been the case, has it?
No. They're like, I can't believe how much they get tested and at what age they start testing them.
I know, yeah.
And it's like, what are you doing?
I know.
What are you trying to do to people?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. But I think there's, I think we could do a much better job of teaching people things.
I think the population's causing a major problem there though. I mean, one of my clients was saying that her son goes to private school and they have 10 children in the class and 3 teachers.
Wow.
Whereas one of her friends just goes to public school, and there's 30 kids in the class and two teachers. And I mean, that the close, well, there's a lot of truths to be shown there. What they said, proof's in the pudding. And I think that, again, just knowing what we know about how we work as humans, especially you so more than most, like, why do we wait until the end of the year to tell a child that they're not doing too good on their grades? Why not just sit at the start of the year and say, what are we going to do this year? What grade do you want to get? And let's give you a path to get there.
Give them some ownership of
it. Yeah,
definitely, definitely. Rather than you're doing this.
Yes.
Because I think I'm quite like a lot of humans, which is, you tell me I'm doing it, I'm not doing it. I don't care if
I'll find my own way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm awkward.
I'm a rebel.
I am. I've got real strong rebel energy. So the second I got
rebel energy, I like it. Yeah.
As soon as I got there with them telling me what to do, I was just like, no.
Yeah.
All right, well, you're in trouble then. All right.
Sure. Whatever. But then society, I suppose, calls that like an authority problem, don't they?
Yeah, but you ask me to do anything, I'll do anything for you.
Yeah.
You tell me to do it.
Sure.
No.
Sure. Is that conditioned, do you think, into us or into you?
I don't know. I've just never responded well to that, even from my mum and dad.
Sure.
And whether it was, I can't remember whether I was like that before everything kicked off.
Sure.
Maybe that was a bit of a reaction to some things, you weren't really bothered about me.
Of course. So in that sense, I mean, like, in terms of yourself, like, discipline, do you find that, because that's telling you what to do, isn't it? Discipline is telling you what to do. It's not asking you to do something. It's like, you must do this.
I don't respond well to that.
No. So in terms of you disciplining yourself.
Oh, that's different, because I don't tell myself I've got to do it.
Right, okay.
I'm very, very disciplined.
Right, okay.
It's like, at the minute, I'm doing a fruit fast. Because I've come across this amazing doctor who's very good at resetting adrenal systems and thyroid and everything. He's got a 40-year track record of amazing results, and he says we are fruitarian, right? We're designed to eat fruit above everything else.
Right.
So he said, if you want to heal, eat fruit.
Okay.
And everybody up here is like, in the office, is like, how the hell are you eating that every day?
Right, okay, yeah.
You know, but I find stuff like that really easy.
Sure.
You know, and I'm very disciplined with stuff like that. I'm disciplined about my fitness and my health. And
is it not bad eating fruit? Because it's really high in sugar, isn't it?
Right, so what he was saying is, though, that there's three types of sugar. You've got fructose, glucose, and galactose. So fructose is fruit, glucose is vegetables, and galactose is milk.
All right.
Individually, they're okay. Well, milk's not really good for
sure. Although stuff. We've been told that it's good for you. As a kid, you should be drinking milk.
Yeah, right. It's very mucus forming and not very good, especially when it's been processed to death.
Right, okay.
Maybe out of a cow 200 years ago that hadn't been processed, it might be okay.
Yeah.
But like, as long as you don't mix the sugars, I can't remember like, you're aware of multisaccharide, right? Multisaccharide means multi-sugar.
Right.
Because there's not just them three, they manufacture sugar as well. Things like
to give it taste,
fructose syrup and things like that, which incidentally is nothing to do with fructose. They just called it that so people would actually eat it.
Okay.
It's just chemically built from whatever. But he said, as long as you just have fructose digests instantly into the body and it doesn't spike you.
Okay.
So it doesn't cause any insulin response.
Sure.
So it doesn't cause diabetes or anything like that.
Right.
And you get 80% more energy back from fruit than you do anything else.
Okay, right.
Because if you think about meat, meat products are designed to be ate by a carnivore.
Right.
So if you take a dog's transit time's hours.
Right.
So, and its stomach's full of really powerful acid to break it down so it can eat bones and everything.
Sure.
Other end of the scale, a cow has got two stomachs, takes about 2 days to process it.
Yeah.
But it's designed to eat vegetables and greenery and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff's really slow.
Right.
And takes a lot. So you get the most out of it.
Okay.
Whereas fruit takes 4 or 5 hours.
Okay.
And that's how long our transit time is.
Right.
So we said our body's anatomically designed better to deal
fruit,
with fruit.
Really?
So you get more energy because with the veggies, you never stop processing it.
Right.
Because you haven't got everything out of it, even when you've finished with it.
Sure.
And the meat, just, there's so much rubbish in meat,
right?
You know what I mean, and it's full of corn and all stuff like that nowadays, which interferes with our systems as well. So he said the only way you can be really sure of healing and really getting stuff out is to just go fruit,
right?
Because there's nothing in fruit that bothers us if it's on its own.
Right.
If you would combine it with everything else, it spikes you all over the place, and
right.
it don't work. So I'm trying it.
Yeah.
No, I'm a big guinea pig. I love trying stuff out.
So how long have you been trying that for now then?
9 days so far.
And do you feel better
for
it?
Way better.
Do you, yeah?
Way better. Yeah.
Has it affected you? Has there been any downsides?
No.
No?
I've sleeping better. I've got more energy. I'm feel better in the gym. I've noticed my knees have been a bit stiff, arthritis-y for the last 6 months or so.
Okay.
That's gone.
Really?
I feel really
right.
fluid and just smooth.
Sure.
And then a weird thing, I went to see that film, I can't remember what it's called, that's got all the Beatles songs in it the other week, with the guy who gets knocked out and wakes up and the Beatles don't exist, but he remembers all their songs, so he starts playing.
Oh, okay.
It's really good, actually.
Yeah.
So I've been playing a few Beatles songs in the shower and singing along, and I love Let It Be.
Right.
And I can't hit the notes, but since I've been doing this, I can
really?
Hit the notes. I think it's because you start decongesting and getting rid of all the phlegm and stuff out
right,
of you.
So because it's cleared something up a little bit.
It's about clearing your lymph system.
Really?
So because wow. your lymph system's like the drainage system of your body.
So anyone that wants to be a singer, there's hope for you yet.
Yeah, if you can't hit them notes, eat lots of fruit.
Eat lots of fruit.
Nothing
fruit.
Else.
Tim, listen, that's been absolutely remarkable. And I said this to a lot of the guests, we could do this all day, and I genuinely mean it as well. Like, it's fascinating. This could be quite easily a 4-hour podcast. Tim, where can people find out more about yourself? If they need any help, any assistance from yourself, where can they find out?
So if you want to go on Facebook and search for Express Yourself, and you'll find there's our logo's like a little purple brain with a pink heart in the middle of it.
Right.
Because we reunite people's heads and hearts.
Brilliant.
And or you can go to www.express-your-self.co.uk. I'll give you the details.
Sure,
anyway.
Yeah, we'll link in.
And one of the things we're doing at the moment is we've just started launching our first money course. We do a lot of work around money.
Okay.
Because it's most people's... We did a survey, actually, with about 280 people to find out what the biggest thing people were dealing with.
Right.
And we put emotional thing.
Right.
We didn't even think about connecting money with emotion. And 92% put money as number one.
Really?
So we're like, okay. And then due to what we've done this year with our own money kind of stories and whatever, and shifted it by discovering that hierarchy and
sure.
all the rest of it, we've been coaching a lot of people around money and having amazing results with them.
That's incredible.
Really shifting the kind of, and it's a combination of doing the emotional stuff and some practical
yeah.
money things to actually manage your money once you,
right.
you're not running the programs
yes.
about it in the background.
Right.
So, and what we're doing is at the moment for this month, we're starting up another thing called the Safe Space, which is a low cost monthly thing that's £30 a month.
Okay.
People can pay and be a membership member
sure.
of, and then you can just come and we hold space for groups of people.
Okay.
So people can bring their things in and say, right, I want to deal with this, and we'll do that for everybody.
Oh, right, okay.
And it works.
That's what, an actual physical face-to-face or?
No, it's on the
online.
It's on the Facebook
yep.
group.
Yep.
And then you're part of that group, which means
okay.
you can ask questions all day long about anything you want,
brilliant.
And we'll answer
sure.
stuff. So what we found is you can teach people it, but what we want people to do is take it and learn it for themselves so they can use it on themselves.
Mm.
That just takes a little bit of practice. So this is the space where people can come and practice that.
Right,
and it'll yeah. be a community and yeah. there'll be lots of cool stuff going on
fabulous.
There. So what we're doing is, for anybody who signs up, if anyone signs up off this for the money course, we'll throw you a month in free
brilliant.
Of the safe space.
Fantastic.
So,
good.
Yeah.
Well, what we'll do is we'll put a link in the
cool.
description to all this as well for anybody listening to it. Tim, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Massively enjoyed this.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.